It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
And if you had to stand in line and hope there was a free clinic open and hope someone would donate their services to you for health care free of charge, you are in a third world system, because that's basically how it works in the third world. You stand in line and hope you can get some service before you have to leave. So we had a system that was not coordinated, it was fragmented. And even as we put all those together, unlike some of those other countries I just mentioned, we still ended up with 30 million people without health insurance, where these other systems had managed to approach universal coverage. So that's where the debate was. How do we take all these pieces? How do we change it? How do we mold it so that we get closer to a couple of goals? One is covering more and more people. Two, controlling those costs, because they were taking off in America, and they still are taking off. And then finally, making sure for all the money that we're spending, we do get quality care, which we weren't always getting for the amount of money we were spending.
Bill Calio, Virginia State Director of AARP, explains what to expect as the new health care reform law is implemented over the next 4 years, in the first of a two-part broadcast of a presentation given on April 26, 2010, at a conference on guardianship, elder rights, and disability services sponsored by the Virginia Guardianship Association and the Virginia Elder Rights Coalition. And in this week's News You Can Use, we report on the U.S. Supreme Court's first decision in 15 years dealing with the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act and how it went in favor of consumers. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 87, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. Last month, the United States Supreme Court issued a major decision under the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act in favor of consumers and against debt collectors. A law firm filed a lawsuit in Ohio to foreclose a mortgage on real property. The complaint included a notice that the mortgage debt would be assumed valid unless the homeowner disputed it in writing. The homeowner's lawyer sent a letter disputing the debt, and when the mortgage company acknowledged that the debt had in fact been paid, the lender withdrew the lawsuit. The homeowner then sued the law firm, contending that by sending the notice requiring her to dispute the debt in writing, the law firm had violated the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, under which a dispute may be in writing or oral. The court not only agreed with the homeowner, but also held that the lender could not rely on the bona fide error defense because, quote, ignorance of the law will not excuse any person, either civilly or criminally, end of quote. The case is German versus Carlisle. In other news, under pressure from consumer advocates, Chase Bank is pulling out of a business that targeted low-income taxpayers with high-cost, short-term, rapid refund loans. The 1 to 2 week loans made by banks and distributed through paid tax preparers drained $738 million from the refunds of 8.4 million American taxpayers in 2008. The loans are expensive, with some lenders charging fees that translate into annual percentage rates of 60 to nearly 700%. According to a report by the National Consumer Law Center, Chase made as many as 1.5 million refund anticipation loans in 2008, facilitated by independent tax preparers who often operate storefronts in low-income communities, though other banks have contracts with tax preparation giants like Jackson Hewitt and H&R Block. The need for the loans has declined as more consumers file electronically and can get their refunds quickly via direct deposit without paying extra fees and sky-high interest rates. HSC Bank previously indicated it will exit the business when its current contracts expire. As Chase follows suit, it means that the two biggest providers of the loans are stepping aside, which deals a welcome blow to the whole product. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
It's time for the answers to our weekly quiz called, Is That Legal? Last week, we gave you a legal question and three possible answers, one of which was incorrect. Here's last week's question. A warrant in debt or civil claim for money must be filed and served before a judgment can be granted. What are two ways a warrant in debt may be served or legally delivered? A. Personally given to the debtor. B. Personally given to a member of the debtor's household. Or C. Mailed to the debtor's last known address. The correct answers are A. Personally given to the debtor. And B. Personally given to a member of the debtor's household. Mailing is good service only if the papers also are posted on the front door and the address must be the correct current address, not simply the last known address. Later in the show, we'll give you this week's quiz. Is that legal? For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault.
On April 26, 2010, Bill Calio, Virginia State Director of AARP, spoke at a conference sponsored by the Virginia Guardianship Association and the Virginia Elder Rights Coalition on guardianship, elder rights, and disability services about the new health care reform law. And the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show was there. Here's part one of this two-part talk.
Thank you, and this has been an interesting presentation I've had to put together because when I was asked to do this, it was back last fall. And so I went to put the outline together and thought, well, will we have a bill? Won't we have a bill? Will it be a House bill? Will it be a Senate bill? What's going to explode on the political scene? How could the elections change and affect everything? So it's been all over the place. So originally where I had planned to do a little bit more on the political legislative side of health care reform, we actually did pass and sign a bill. So I'm going to shift a little bit, start with some backgrounder, but get a little bit more detailed into the content of the new law. I'd like to start off by saying to people now, we're not talking about legislation any longer. We're not talking about bills any longer. We're talking about the new law, how it's changed the healthcare system in America, and how it's going to affect different people. And trust me, it affects you differently, depending on whether you're young, in the workforce, on Medicare, a provider. There's a lot in here for everybody. This has probably been one of the most contentious pieces of legislation that's ever moved through the Congress. I just put some background on it, just a reminder that health care reform itself was not something that burst on the scene this year. We have been dealing with the health care system in America for decades. It started in earnest back, you know, with the Roosevelts. It tried to get some steam under Truman. It tried to move again under Johnson. It made a huge attempt under Clinton. And this is the first time, however, that we've actually overcome a lot of those political hurdles and ended up with a new law. The American healthcare system, as you know, has been problematic for many Americans. While over 60% of Americans today receive their healthcare through their employer, there's a whole bunch of other sources of health insurance that have been kind of patched together through our system. And I was going to take some time to talk a little bit about where Medicare came from, where Medicaid came from, our employer-based system, what are some of the other consumer protections that have been patched together over the years. But the bottom line is every time we tried to do that, we ended up with a system that still left too many people out, that still cost too much money, and that always didn't deliver the quality that we expected for the amount of money that we were paying. So all those efforts still left us with over 30 million people uninsured. It still left us with costs that were growing too fast for any system to sustain, and something had to be done. There really wasn't a lack of consensus on that part. Something has to be done. Where the lack of consensus happened was political ideology, different perspectives on what that something should be. And that sure exploded on our political scene this year, that lack of consensus on what that something is that needs to happen. One thing we do know is that we really didn't have an American healthcare system when we started down this endeavor. And I often start my talks with people by saying, tell me what the American healthcare system is. What's the unique American healthcare system? And most people can't tell me. Well, that's because it's broken up into a whole bunch of different people, and it depends on where you are in life or circumstances, how you get your health care. For instance, if you're 65 and older, you get your health care through Medicare. Is Medicare a uniquely American health care system? It's not. Medicare is a single-payer system. It's the Canadian health care system. As a matter of fact, when Medicare passed in the 1960s, they didn't know how to do it. The federal government didn't know how to do it, so what they did was they looked to Canada and said, they're doing a pretty good job up there. Let's see how they're doing it. And they literally imported the Canadian healthcare system in. At that point in today, the Canadian healthcare system is called Medicare, just like our Medicare program is called. So for one segment of our population, we did have government-run health insurance, a single-payer system, which was Canadian in nature. If you got your healthcare as a disabled veteran, you got it through the VA system. The VA system is the British system. It's government-run healthcare. Government owns the hospitals, hires the doctors and all the professionals, and pays them directly for that service. If you got your healthcare system through your employer, that was very similar to the German or the French systems and how they deliver healthcare to their entire population, and on and on. And if you had to stand in line and hope there was a free clinic open and hope someone would donate their services to you for healthcare free of charge, you are in a third world system, because that's basically how it works in the third world. You stand in line and hope you can get some service before you have to leave. So we had a system that was not coordinated, it was fragmented, and even as we put all those together, unlike some of those other countries I just mentioned, we still ended up with 30 million people without health insurance, where these other systems had managed to approach universal coverage. So that's where the debate was. How do we take all these pieces? How do we change it? How do we mold it so that we get closer to a couple of goals? One is covering more and more people. Two, controlling those costs, because they were taking off in America, and they still are taking off. And then finally, making sure for all the money that we're spending, we do get quality care, which we weren't always getting for the amount of money we were spending. So that's the backdrop. We went politically. It was a long and divisive debate. It is still a divisive debate, which is interesting. I've never seen a bill pass that the debate went on. Usually we get over it, you know, implement it and say that's it. Matter of fact, you know, Social Security was divisive. Medicare was divisive. Some of the other great social initiatives like the Civil Rights Act were very divisive. These were all bills that when they passed didn't have a majority support of the American people. But as they became implemented, they became mainstays in our society, and now people look back and say, gosh, what was the problem, you know, with creating Social Security? What was the problem with creating Medicare? What was the problem with the Civil Rights Act? But we're still in the middle of this thing, and it's still divisive. And we've heard comments after the bill passed. There's a movement now called Repeal and Replace, that those who did not win the legislative battle now want to do away with the piece of legislation that passed. That's still kicking up. We know we're going to go into federal elections. Every member of the House of Representatives is up for election this fall. Guess what? Welcome back to healthcare reform debate, because it's going to be a key part of how people position around that. So it's not gone away yet. Unfortunately, it became hugely partisan. So the prospects of forming bipartisan agreement disappeared very early. The House gave up looking for a consensus or a bipartisan consensus in about July or August of last year. The Senate tried and tried and tried and gave up in about October. So the piece of legislation that became law is highly partisan. It's seen as a Democratic bill, not as a Democratic and Republican bill. And that's usually a bad formula when you have a bill out there that one party unanimously opposed.
You're listening to a talk given on April 26, 2010 by Bill Calio, Virginia State Director of AARP, about the new health care reform law at a conference on guardianship, elder rights, and disability services sponsored by the Virginia Guardianship Association and the Virginia Elder Rights Coalition. We'll be back in a moment. If you're just joining us, the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show now rejoins Bill Calio, Virginia State Director of AARP, in a talk about the new health care reform law given on April 26, 2010, at a conference sponsored by the Virginia Guardianship Association and the Virginia Elder Rights Coalition on Guardianship, Elder Rights, and Disability Services.
Misinformation. This has probably been the worst time for misinformation I have ever seen in my life. When this debate kicked off in earnest in July and August, the information out there that was either uninformed, technically incorrect, or, and I will say it, an outright lie, just took off. You know, and unlike these earlier debates that we had on these other major issues, we didn't have 24/7 news coverage. We didn't have talk shows out there who had to fill up a whole bunch of time. We didn't have people trying to sell commercial spots by being very controversial. And that information went and went. It was so bad last August and September and a little bit into October, it almost felt futile to try to have a real debate and discussion about points and proposed bills. I had the wonderful privilege of doing a couple of those town hall meetings with members of Congress. I did one with Congressman Connolly, one with Congressman Perriello. I even did one with Eric Cantor. And the audience response and the audience anger was almost shocking. It almost made you wonder if we could function as a democracy when people didn't have the ability anymore to get together and air their differences and agree to disagree and work them through the process. There would be people that would yell, would scream. When you would try to give them fact, they would tell you you're a liar because they heard someplace else that that's not true, rather than sit down and debate. That misinformation is still out there. So we're going to have to be dealing with that as people adjust to the new healthcare system, because they're going to have heard the misinformation and they're going to repeat it. Next, it was a large and complex bill. How many people here read it? I didn't read it. I'm fortunate to have a whole group of staff in another place who summarized it, you know, and it gives me and answers every question I have about it. But it was large and complex. It was large and complex for a couple of reasons. One, it started out not just to reform health insurance, it started out to reform the healthcare system, which meant it was looking at more than how people get their insurance and pay for it. It was looking at how we deliver health care and how we organize health care so that we can deliver it in a much more cost-efficient way. And that bill kind of grew. That's where you get death panels from, you know, little pieces in a bill that are looking at improving quality or looking at giving people greater access to information they need to make more informed choices. That stuff kind of escalated. So it's very large and very complex. It is rearranging 17 to 19% of all the money in our gross domestic product. So you can imagine it had to be big and complex. Did it need to be that large of a bill? Probably not. But it certainly wasn't something that you were going to take care of in, you know, 50 to 100 pages. So the very complex nature of the bill means people are still figuring out what's in it in many ways. And as they discover that, they get concerned. And then finally, as this debate went on through about December, public support began to decline. And the public support began to decline for a couple of reasons. One, people got weary. You can only have this much anxiety and tension and misinformation and debate going on so long. So people just got weary of it. Secondly, because the misinformation was so strong, people began to distrust the whole process. So they started to shut down on it and say, I'd rather do nothing because I don't know who to believe any longer. In here. And then finally, when we got toward the end of this thing and it became quite clear that it was going to be completely partisan and deals started getting made in Congress, it kind of showed the worst of Congress. where all of a sudden you saw, you know, Louisiana getting their purchase and Cornhuskers getting their deal and Florida getting their carve-outs just to get votes to pass this thing. The American public became very disillusioned again with just the way Congress does business. So we finally passed a piece of legislation that had long and divisive debate, partisan politics, lots of misinformation, large complex bill, declining public support. So when it was all done, there wasn't this big celebration. Great, now let's go on to something else. It still lingers. Given that context, let me start first by just giving you an overview of the major pieces that are in that bill that affect, you know, how health care is going to be delivered and some of the new rules. First of all, the bill does finally bring in about 32 million Americans that presently do not have access to health insurance. This will be a huge step forward. This doesn't happen until the year 2014, but at that point, every individual that accepts a few will be required to have health insurance. And mechanisms and vehicles have been created to bring everybody into a quality healthcare system in a way that they can afford it. So that we can look forward to. We're going to have 32 million and climbing more Americans with health insurance by the year 2014. It made major steps in eliminating discrimination in coverage. Our healthcare system, particularly through businesses and through private systems, had kind of responded to the market and changed over time. And it had gotten to the point where there were a whole bunch of policies that were set up by insurance companies that discriminated against people in certain ways. It discriminated against anybody who had a pre-existing condition. So if you tried to buy health insurance, you either couldn't get it or it was very, very expensive. It discriminated against women by leaving out certain women's health concerns in policies that you assumed would be in there but weren't always in there. It discriminated against older people, 55 to 64 in particular, because of heavy age rating. Prior to this law, if you were 59 years old, relatively good health, and you tried to purchase the same policy as a 29-year-old, your premium could be 10 times as high just because of age and for no other reason at that point. So there's a lot of discrimination in the way that we operated in the healthcare system. Many and most insurance policies actually could put caps on how much they would pay every year. Some of them could put lifetime caps, so that if you had a particularly serious illness, you could exhaust your entire lifetime benefit under your health insurance. So it discriminated against people who became ill and actually used their health insurance. So all of those things are changed now under the new law, with brand new rules that help bring those people in and keep people in and are fair to the consumer. The new law expands and strengthens Medicare. How many people have heard that the new law is going to seriously cut Medicare? Okay, yeah, I've heard that too. We're going to talk about that because that's been a real misunderstanding. And if you look at the polls, my organization represents older citizens, and the group that has the least support for the health care reform bill that passed is, guess what? People 65 and older. Because they've been convinced that Medicare is going to be cut, that their traditional benefits are going to erode and go away, and that the money that's coming, quote, out of Medicare to help fund health care reform is damaging the Medicare system. I'll talk a little bit later about that, but actually, in AARP's analysis of the bill, this bill actually expands benefits under Medicare and strengthens Medicare in the process of doing it. And I'll give you a little bit more detail toward the end on how that works.
You've been listening to part one of a two-part talk given on April 26, 2010 by Bill Calio, Virginia State Director of AARP, about the new health care reform law at a conference on guardianship, elder rights, and disability services sponsored by the Virginia Guardianship Association and the Virginia Elder Rights Coalition. This is the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show.
It's time for our weekly quiz called, Is That Legal? We give you a legal question and three possible answers, one of which is incorrect, and we give the correct answers next week. If you're the first to email the two correct answers, we'll post your name on our show's website and send you a free copy of the Virginia State Bar's Handbook on Your Legal Rights and Responsibilities. Here's this week's question.
Employees have rights under the minimum wage law. Which two wage rules are required? A, paying a minimum wage of $7.25 per hour. B, paying time and 1/4 for evening and weekend work. Or C, paying time and 1/2 for overtime work of more than 40 hours in a week. If you know the two correct answers, email them by Friday to marty@cvlas.org and be next week's winner. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on this show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is now available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Healthcare reform is now the law of the land and could change American society as profoundly as Social Security, Medicare, and civil rights laws. Join us next week when Bill Calio, Virginia State Director of AARP, explains what to expect as the new law is implemented over the next 4 years in the second of a two-part presentation. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.